Hello, friends. This is Nikki Lynn Pugh, aka the Gentle Healthy Traveler, and this is the Victim to Victorious Summit. I am pleased to have Joseph Wilson with us today. How are you, Joseph?
I am doing so well. Thank you so much for having me on here. I am pumped.
All the way from New Zealand. That is so awesome that you could join us. A little bit about Joseph. Joseph Wilson is a radical, Jesus-loving entrepreneur and coach to world changers. Wow. Joseph's mission in life is to mobilize people into their purpose. He believes that the solution to all the world's problems lies in the divine design of each unique individual, and his life calling is coaching people to become the person their dream requires. Well, Joseph resides in New Zealand, is happily married to wife Kirsten, and together they have three children. One of the reasons why, all of his information is below. We'll talk about that later. It's IamJosephWilson.com, and his podcast is Fuse Life on YouTube. You know, one of the reasons why I am so excited to have Joseph here is because he just has this ability to just inspire, mobilize. We're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about purpose today. So let's get right in. Can you tell us about purpose? Where do we start? I'm just going to let you talk, man. If you want to start a little bit, because I was like, let's just get to it. We always start a little bit with personal story, just so we can get to know you a little bit better personally, and your V2V story, Victim to Victorious story. So however you want to take us from the personal and then bring us out and just go for it. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Wow. Well, it's amazing to hear an intro like that. Thank you for reading. You know, I don't read my bio, so it's quite interesting.
I sound pretty good. Yeah. Who is this guy?
Just even hearing, you know, radical Jesus loving. I remember a time where like all of this was just religious hogwash to me. You know, I grew up in South India till I was 11 years old and my family migrated here. So I had seen religion with the robes and the organ and just do this, don't do that, and da da da. And so it was all a good story to me. And when I came to New Zealand, for some reason, I would get dragged to all these meetings. Even strangers, like some pastors, would end up taking me to home groups and stuff. And I never quite understood. And they would prophesy, well, you know, say things like, oh, this is going to happen in your future. And I'm like, oh, whatever, man. Like, my thing was, you guys are all old. You had your fun. And now you're trying to be a good boy. You know, that's kind of how I viewed walking with God. Like, just be a good boy. So I made up my mind that I was going to have fun. And when I got older and I was nearly going to die, I was going to become a good boy. That was my plan. So at about 16, 17, you know, university, start partying, drinking, clubbing, all that good stuff. And what I thought was good stuff. And I ended up drunk at a church one Sunday. I'd partied all night. And for some reason, I drove to this church. I was still drunk from the night before. And I was sitting in the back seat and I had a supernatural encounter that shifted everything for me. So I was sitting in the back and this girl was just singing this song in another language. And I felt a heat go through my body and I sobered up. And I remember at that time, like there was no one near me. I started to see my whole life, my childhood, and just feeling like God had been with me this whole time. But it really messed me up, because if God was with me this whole time, then why did this happen? Why did that happen? Why didn't he just do this? And I had all these questions, you know? So that day, June 8th, 2008, I said, if you are real, show me. I'm giving you a month. And if you show me you're real, you can have my life, you know? And that's not even my language. I never spoke that kind of language. I don't know where that came from. It just kind of popped out. You can have my life. Like, it was really weird. But in the next month, this radical love just accepted me and pulled me into a place that I have not left in the last 13 years and I'll never leave, you know? So that's kind of how it came about. Like, so when I hear Jesus loving, I remember a time where I'm like, I'm not a Jesus lover. Like, I'd never say I love Jesus, you know? Like, it was awkward to me, but that began this whole journey for me. And yeah, I guess purpose began from there, you know?
That's beautiful. Let's talk a little about purpose. Why is it important to be, first of all, what does purpose mean? to you and to the work that you do with people. And let's just unpack that term, that concept, why it's important. Let's just start the combo because it's so deep and rich. We're going to be there for a while.
Yeah. So I need to explain little bits of my story to explain this purpose thing. Cause I remember as a kid many times saying to my mom, I'm bored, you know, I'm bored. Like my friends is playing or whatever, but I was always bored. Like something in me was searching for more. I just didn't know what it was. So when I had this encounter with God, I thought like doing the church thing was it. So I started serving at church, you know, 6 days a week, I'm giving my time, my life to this organization, thinking that, okay, that's the way to do it, you know? And I went through a whole journey there because there was an issue in my church and it kind of blew everything open. And it started to make me go even deeper on this question of, well, why am I here, God? And I think every person has this question, whether you believe in a God or a supreme being or not, deep down, we're longing for the answer to that question of why am I here? What is my ultimate objective, you know? So that caused me to go even deeper. Like, you know, I love to say this, when you find religion, you find a hobby. When you find God, you find purpose, you know? Purpose, the definition of purpose is original intent. What is the original intent behind the thing? And everything that we're using right now that you would see in your office, that I'm using a microphone, headphones, all of these things were created with purpose, for a purpose, on purpose. And the creator of that thing had the purpose in mind when he or she was designing it. And so to me, it was like, man, God had something in mind when he was designing me, when he was creating me, a unique, original intent. And what I have found in my journey is when you start walking through that and yielding to that, life starts to make a lot more sense. And there's a lot more fulfillment. There's a lot more joy, a lot more peace. This experience of life is a lot more fun because you understand your part in it, your place in it. You know, there is a famous quote by a man named Miles Monroe, Dr. Miles Monroe. And he says, when the purpose of a thing is not known, abuse is inevitable. When you don't know the purpose of something, you will abuse it. Now, when people hear the word abuse, they straight away go to, you know, something traumatic like sexual abuse or emotional abuse or whatever, physical abuse. Yeah. And that's right. But the actual word abuse, the meaning of that word is just abnormal use. Abnormal use. That's all it is. And so abuse is happening on a daily level to most of us in different ways because we are either living a life that we weren't created for or we're doing things without knowing the purpose of it. So we are abusing it unintentionally. So you can now look at this with everything, with marriage. When you don't know the purpose of marriage, you will abuse it, abnormal use. When you don't know the purpose of children, you will abuse it. When you don't know the purpose of sex, when you don't know the purpose of love, when you don't know the purpose of a thing, you will abuse it, you know? So I started to go deep and understand that, like, there is purpose behind everything. And when you align with that purpose, there is a flow. There is an ease. There is a wind that starts to blow. And you're not fighting it anymore. You're not trying to create something. There's this ease of living from inside out instead of trying to live from the outside in.
Living from inside out. I love that. So what you're talking about is not a doing, right? Purpose is not a lot of times in our culture, you know, we think, oh, I got to find my purpose. That means I have to find my calling, what I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But what I hear you saying is something different, right, than that, right?
Yeah. So this is one of the myths. Like, so as I went on this journey, you start to find all these myths that people believe. And one of the biggest ones is my purpose is somewhere out there and I got to find it. And then I got to do it. You know, we make it about an event. But life is not an event. Life is a journey. It's a constant evolving, maturing growth process. Why would purpose be anything different? So there are people who've taken purpose and they've made it about an event or they've made it about a thing and then been disappointed when that event finishes or the thing finishes. So for example, some people, because they're athletic, have thought that their purpose is to play a specific sport. Instead of going deeper into the being, they got hung up on the doing. They play the sport and they become great at their sport. They go to the Olympics, they win the gold medals, but then they come into a deep depression when it's done because now, why am I here?
Yeah.
See, purpose is not something that is ever lost. Your purpose is in you, has been in you since the foundation of the world, since your conception, since the thought of you, not since you being on the planet. It's always been in you. And that purpose, I believe, is in seed form, and it requires intention. It requires desire to nurture it into a tree. You know, I have this picture that I like to show people, this picture here of a seed that's turning into this tree. So everybody has purpose over here in that seed form. Everyone has that. And if you have watered it, if you have given it sunlight and warmth and nurtured it, it's growing to some capacity. Mm-hmm. And so the way I like to look at water and warmth and sunlight and nurture is intention, is desire, is where I put my time and my energy into the things that are in me that then start to grow and evolve and mature eventually into a tree that bears fruit. The fruit has seed and it becomes an ecosystem in my life. Does that make sense? I'm trying not to go too deep too fast.
Go for it, man. Let it rip.
So for example, for my life, from when I was a kid, I had this kind of coaching thing in me. I had this, like, when I look back now, when I was a kid, I'd always have my sister who's 2 or 3 years older than me asking me for advice. When I was in sports teams, I'd end up as the captain and people are coming to me for advice. There was something, that seed was already in there of, I have something to do with other people and I'm able to bring out the gold in other people. Yeah. But it was just in seed form. And the more I did it, the more it got nurtured. You know, and that's one example of this. Like, everybody has a seed in them and some have nurtured it more than others. Mm. There is nobody without a seed. And when you put intention, desire, time and energy behind this, you will start to see it flourish and flourish faster. So one of the things that I've learned is that people's seed, they don't recognize it because it comes so naturally to them. So talking to people, working with people, pulling out the gold in people comes naturally to me. I'm very interested in it. I love spending, I could do this for hours. It gives me energy. It doesn't take my energy.
Yeah.
So I could easily devalue that because I think it's so normal, but it's only normal for me. It's normal. It's not normal for others. Like my wife would hate to be a coach. Like that is something that saps her energy. It would drain her. It's not a seed in her. But the way she is compassionate, the way she is loving, the way she's a mom, I can't parent like her. It just, it's natural to her. Like it's a seed in her, you know? And so you start to realize the uniqueness in each person. And I believe that that's very important, especially in 2021, because we right now are so incapable of seeing the divine uniqueness in each other and thus choosing each other and coming together, because somewhere we think we all should be like each other. Like, I need to be more like you, or you should be more like me. Somewhere the world has tried to train us in that. So I keep coming back to this original intent, your unique divine design. And there is so much more we can go into that. You know, like I'll tell you one little thing here.
Yeah.
The world, the way the world has been systemically designed, it has actually caused us to try and become a part of the crowd instead of stand up in our uniqueness. So from when you're a child, you know, you hear things like, you should be more like your cousin Tommy. Why aren't you more like your, you know, cousin Janet? Why aren't you like your neighbor down the road? Like, they do this better. You should be like them, right? Then you go to school. And what happens in school? You all wear the same uniform, same color shoes, do your hair the same way. At the same time, you're all going to eat at the same time, go to the class at the same time. This bell starts to condition us to become part of a crowd. While the whole time we were divinely designed to not be that. So now you're growing older and older and you're trying your best to fit into the system. Like, oh, there's only these 6 subjects. Are you good at these 6 subjects? If you're not, you're a failure. And, you know, so you're now marked the same way. I'm going to mark all you kids the same way out of 100. And you start getting conditioned to become part of the crowd. So now you grow older and older, and this fulfillment, which can only come from my unique expression, is just longing to come out. But I've spent 30 years trying to be like everybody else. I don't even know where to start. I don't even know how to let that out.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much pain I have seen people go through, even when they come into church or God, because they're just trying to fit a mold. How much pain. I've seen people get married trying to fit the mold. They got married because that was the right thing to do at 30. That was the right thing to do at 27, you know? Yeah. And so they fit this mold, but there's so much pain now because that unique expression is wanting out. And when you look at something like surveys they do with old people that are about to pass away and they're 70, 80, 90 years old, their only thing is the regret. And the regret is, I didn't do the things that I knew were in me because of other people, because of fear of opinion and all that kind of stuff, you know?
It's so deep. It goes so deep. It's I've read those studies as well. It's like the one thing that is regretting, whatever that could be, writing that one book, or, you know, spending more time with certain individuals, or whatever it is. It's that thing is usually what they regret, like on their deathbed. And I feel like you're talking to so many people probably listening to this interview that kind of felt like the black sheep, that kind of felt like the the odd person out, like in their family, or everyone just thought they were kind of different, weird, you know. Yeah, and that could be like, you know, your church group, or it could be your family, or it could be your community, or it could be whatever, but it's like you just didn't quite fit in. And I feel like that's connected to that seed that just wants to express. I don't know.
It is. And so I just want to say this one thing. Every person feels like that. Every person. There are just some who perfected the art of conforming. That's all it is.
They just mask it so well.
And when they see someone owning their black sheepness, when they see someone owning their individual expression, they're threatened. And this happens in every part of society, from teachers, from academia, politics, church, religion, hierarchy, and every aspect is threatened by unique expression and someone owning their individuality, you know, able to own their mistakes, own them and be free, you know? So I don't think there is any person who at some point doesn't feel I am different. They're just some that have learned how to mask it and hide it so well. But deep down, they also feel the same thing. Like, I am different. How do I embrace it? You know?
Yeah, because we are. I mean, we're each unique.
Yep.
Right? So we are each different.
Yeah. You know, I have three daughters upstairs, and they are so ridiculously different. I mean, they carry the DNA. They carry the heart of mom and dad. But their expressions and how they joke and what they like to do with their time and some of their words and some of their cheekiness, you know, they're all cheeky, but it's so different. Like, they're so unique, and we can't raise them the same way. You know, we can't talk to them the same way. Like, my three daughters require such a different way of communication and different amounts of time and different amounts of touch, different amounts of interaction, you know, and so we were never created to be the same.
So beautiful. So how can we start to experience our purpose?
Well, I have to throw this in here, right? So the God factor that happened for me, not the religious factor, but the God factor was a big one. Okay. Because when I had this encounter with God, I started to speak religion back to him. You know, in my heart, I was saying things like, you can't love me because, you know, I slept with these girls, or I got drunk. I love to get drunk. There's perversion in me. I love this stuff. You know, you can't, how can you love me? What people taught me was, you only love me if I do good things. So I had this battle that was first overcome with this radical acceptance and love. Like, when I realized, oh my gosh, God just loves me as I am. He loves me. I can't believe this. That kind of just set this freedom in me to then enjoy my journey. I talk about the five E's a lot. You know, five E's. I say you can ease into your purpose, right? Explore, engage, express, enjoy, evolve. I talk about these five E's. And so you explore, and then you learn how to engage. You learn how to express who you really are. Mm. You enjoy that journey. And then you just keep evolving, you know? Mm. So the starting point is the willingness to explore.
Yeah.
And a lot of people get hung up on the explore and engage because they're scared. They're either scared of getting it wrong, or they're scared of what people are going to think about them. They're scared that it's too late, or they're too short, or they're too fat, they're too thin, they're too big, they're too, their story's too bad, or their story's too good, right? There's this fear to explore and engage. And that is usually where I get people to start. You're going to have to be willing to explore. The only reason you and I today can talk, we can use our hands, we have motor neuron patterns, we can walk, we can eat properly. The only reason you and I can go to the toilet properly is because we explored how to do that. We engaged it, right? We expressed it in our own way. We enjoyed the learning process, and we evolved.
Yeah.
When you skip this process, you don't have freedom. You end up having a formula, and a formula will always rob you from your unique freedom. So I try and get people to start where you are. You know, what do you love doing? The four main questions: what do you love? What do you hate? Because when it elicits an emotion, when it elicits something in you, like some people I know, they're really peeved off by injustice. And that's a very big clue to what you carry, right? Injustice does something to you. You want to fix that. So yeah. What do you love? What do you hate? What is a problem you see in the world that keeps coming over? Like you keep noticing that problem. Mm-hmm. Now, these are all little clues. And what did you want to do as a child? These four questions are very good questions. Mm. You know, and they start the journey. They begin the exploring, and then you need to engage.
Mm. I love it. And I want to circle back to what you said in the very beginning, because it's on my heart when you mentioned God, and you mentioned that feeling of love. It's almost like when I started feeling, this is just my own personal experience that I'll share. I don't usually do this on these interviews, but when I began to feel that love coming from who I would call Father Yeshua, it was hard to accept, because like how can, first it was just an energy. It was just a feeling coming from me.
Yep.
And then I realized like this is what the universe, because our creator created all this. This is what it's made out of, him, right? Mm-hmm. Or they, or divine, however you want to define it. And it almost feels like it's the container, that love is the container through which we can explore. Because, you know, we don't have to go too deep on that, but it's just something that was coming out and I wanted to share it. It's like, because some people feel that they are afraid to explore, afraid to engage, but that love can be that safe space in which you can do that. Because you take it with you wherever you go, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think people don't sit on the definition of love, like to define love. What is love? You know, and there's a passage in the Bible, 1 Corinthians, you know, chapter 13. There's a really good passage. People use this all over the place, but they never think about it. Like from verse 4 to verse 8, it starts describing this thing called love. You know, love is patient. Love is kind. It's always hoping the best, believing the best. Love never gives up. It never boasts. It never tries to make itself above you, right? It's describing this love. Love rejoices in the truth. Some of us are scared of the truth. I love telling the truth, because as I tell the truth, there's rejoicing because of love, and I come into freedom. And that love, like you say, is a big deal. It's a massive deal, because it gives you room to move, to go, you know? And I think when you reduce love to an earthly concept or to a very limited way of looking at it, you can miss out on that. So yeah, I love that you bring that up.
Yeah. Okay. Talk about what you're doing around purpose, around your programs. You have challenges that you're doing. Yeah. Are you going to be doing another challenge? Maybe talk a little bit about what those are.
Yeah. So I like to explain to people that we move in cycles, you know, just like there's seasons on the planet, there are seasons in your life and there are cycles. I like to call them cycles over seasons, because I believe you can speed through cycles. You can speed through seasons. I believe a season doesn't have to be 4 months or 6 months or a year. Okay. I meet some people that they like that kind of terminology. Like, I'm just in a season, which means for a year, I'm going to be here. You know, I could be in a season for 30 seconds. The reason I can say that is because every season has a purpose. Once the purpose is achieved, the season passes. If you don't understand purpose, then you make it about the season, and you can go through a lot of seasons and never fulfill the purpose of that season. And so when you understand that every season has a purpose, the good, the bad, the ugly, the mess, somehow you start to cycle through them quicker than most people. I've met some people stuck in a cycle for 10 years, 15, 20 years. You can be stuck in cycles because you don't want to explore, engage, express, enjoy, evolve. You don't want to move through them, you know? So I'm very big on movement. I try and get people to start taking action, because action is the way that you will learn identity, you know? So this might sound funny, but you know, we talked about the be and the do. There is a beautiful relationship between the be and the do. The more you know who you are, the be, the more you start to do. And the more you start to do, the more you understand who you are. You need them both. You can't have one without the other. And most people want to get lopsided on this, you know. Okay. They make it all about action. You got to do. And then some make it all about the being, and nothing's happened in 20 years in their life. But the real synergy is when your be and your do learn how to dance, like a divine dance. You know? So, for example, We have babies at home who've now grown up, you know, like my oldest daughter is 6 years old, but she was a baby. And the first thing she learned was she was our baby. She learned the being, and she would, you know, cry and poo and pee and do all the stuff. But we just loved her for nothing in her. Like, she's not doing anything for us. There was no do, really. But that be then led to a do, because now affection started to happen. She would reach out for mama. She would cry for mama. She'd reach out for papa. She'd touch papa. The doing started to become a byproduct of the being. Mm. And then it strengthened the being, because then papa would reach back and mama would reach back. And then now there's a reciprocity in a hug and a kiss and interaction and a look and security and this whole beautiful dance of the be and the do. So when I meet people who haven't learned that, that's the first thing we got to start learning, is from the be and the do. Do from who you are and let it strengthen who you are and understand that, you know. Mm. I think that's a big part that I try and get people in that movement. Take action, start moving, you're going to learn this. And so I end up helping people launch their first step in the first cycle. So either writing that book, you know, there are a lot of things people overcome in writing their first book, like, do I have something worthy to write about? Can I write? My grammar is so bad. Who's going to read?
Yes.
You know, so I met people who haven't written a book, but 20 years ago, they knew they were supposed to write a book. Yeah. So now that book is a baby out of season. So I've met people that have 3 or 4 babies in the canal that just need to come out so that this baby in this season can have its way.
Yeah.
But if they're not going to release these babies, that you get blocked up. You know, when you're blocked up, it's not a good feeling. A lot of frustration. And there's a lot of unfulfillment, because you know there is more, but you just can't get it. And you can't get it because you're blocked up. So when I meet people, I get them to take their first step. And for some people, they end up writing a book. They end up starting a charity. They do all this in 2 months, because these are old babies that were waiting to come out.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they go, oh man, like, here is a vision that I've had in me. And now they start to birth their current season baby, you know, current cycle. Yeah. So I like to just move people in the cycles. Very simple.
It feels like there's a completion energy as well. Like with seasons, there's the beginning, the middle, and the end, I guess. Or then it's, you can look at it.
There is. And so the completion is just as important as the conception. In fact, most people don't finish what they start. How many people do we know, you start reading a book, you never finish it. You start writing a book, you never finish it. You start a project, you never finish it. Like, I have courses that people start and they never finish. I've started courses and not finished them, you know. There is a certain dominion, that you might call it, a certain victory, a certain power that you get when you become a finisher. And learning how to come through cycles is a very, very important thing. So when you're going through a cycle, and let's say it's a bit traumatic or it's a bit aggressive, and maybe something happened to you, maybe your spouse did something to you and it was really hard, or maybe you had a divorce and you're going through the cycle, the most important thing to remember in a cycle is who you are becoming, not what you're doing. Because who you are becoming is the person that's going to go into the next cycle, not what you did.
For example,
for me, I wrote a book. I mean, my book to some extent has been read by a few hundred people, but it's not, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. That book was not supposed to be there. That book was making me the guy ready for the next cycle. And so when I'm training people to write a book, I keep them focused on that. It's who you're becoming, not what you're doing. Even if nobody ever reads your book, the fact that you finish your book is going to launch you into your next phase.
Next phase.
This becomes really fun. You start enjoying the journey. You're starting to look to something deeper than just, or this injustice happened to me, or this was wrong that happened to me, or why did that happen to me? You're able to move past these things because you are becoming. And I think that's the most important thing.
Now let's talk about the becoming. So you are complete, you're moving through cycles, you're completing, you're doing from that sense of your beingness. And then this is where we talk about what you call I am, right?
Yeah.
So can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So so I like to say purpose equals I am. Identity, assignment, maturity.
Okay.
To whatever level you understand your identity, you have an assignment. So that's every person on the planet. To some capacity, they understand their identity, who they are, and they have an assignment in front of them. As they engage their assignment, their maturity is revealed, and then it gets strengthened. But I need to define these things. So to me, maturity is original intent. We come back to purpose, right? And the way I look at it is, I was designed to be just like my Father in heaven. That's what the Bible says. And, you know, we can talk about religion, kingdom, and churchianity a little bit. But
well, we could talk a little bit just to define those things for people who might not be aware of those terms. you talk about churchianity versus kingdom. Can you just define those two so that we can put it into context?
So this Bible, right, this book, you know, there are a lot of people who believe it's the word of God, and then there are people who are like, it's just stories made up by people, it means nothing. And I remember where my mom had this old big King James, you know, therefore thou art Bible. And I used to read that Bible to fall asleep. Okay, I'm not even kidding. Any nights that I would have trouble sleeping because there's too much going on in my mind, I would get that book. And I remember a couple of times I'd open that book, and by the time I get through a few sentences of therefore thou art, I'm done. I'm asleep. You know? That's what that book was to me. But when the reality of there being a supreme being kind of came into my life, that book came alive to me. And so I look at that book like that. To me, that book holds the words of life. Like there are secrets in there. It's amazing. But I know many people who know that book. I know people who know that book, but they don't know the author. They it's just words to them. It's just religion to them. And I like to separate this because I get annoyed at religion, because religion is trying to earn something that God just has given us. Religion is trying to pretend to deserve something that we just been given as a gift. So it really annoys me, because I've seen so many people get trapped in that religious cycle. Like they go to church to try and become part of God's family. They think they have to pray and read, and they have to try and be a good person. Total opposite to what God really intended, you know? So when I look at Jesus, or I look at Yeshua, I look at his life, I look at the way he lived. He never came and brought a religion. He didn't come and bring Christianity. You can't actually even find that in the Bible. He keeps making reference to the kingdom, the kingdom, the kingdom, the kingdom of God is like, and he keeps giving examples of what the kingdom of God is like. And if you really look at what he's talking about, that is a kind of a utopia, a perfect world. If the kingdom that of God was really manifesting on the planet we live in now, everybody would love it. But religion has done a great job in, you know, in misrepresenting God as a father, misrepresenting Jesus or Yeshua as who he was, an older brother, as one that paved the way. You know, the misrepresentation has caused a lot of confusion. And so I meet a lot of people that are hurt. They've been hurt by church, traditions of man. They've been hurt by going to that Sunday, doing that thing, hoping something magical is going to happen, without understanding that actually the Christ seed, the real intention of what Jesus did, was inside us. You know, just like this seed that you see here. And as you nurture that, it becomes a tree. But most people have not understood the seed and not nurtured it. They've only understood religion, and they've nurtured a hobby, a practice. They've not nurtured the becoming.
Yeah.
And so when I talk about maturity, I believe that when God made me, he made me in his image. He made me to be like him. He didn't just make me because he kind of liked that. He made me from him. You know, I came from him and I'm still in him. So my purpose, my original intent with all that I'm doing, is actually to be more and more like him. And the bottom line of who he is pure love. That's God. He is pure love. And that's who I was created to be. That's who you were created to be. And that is why when somebody starts getting saturated in love, their whole life changes from spirit to their soul, to their body, to everything they touch, their hearts, their finances, their purpose. Everything starts to change because love is the greatest power source that has ever existed.
So good. And so with that, now that we've kind of defined, and it's like, there's so much more, but some of these terms, and kind of put it into context. Now, can you circle back and then talk about I am purpose and I am in this, and that, now that we've kind of established.
Yeah. So maturity, if I define maturity as I am just like my Father in heaven, I am love, I am mercy, you know, I am forgiveness. I be to others in a way that they don't deserve, but because that's who I am, I can be that. You know, I am honor. I honor people not because they deserve honor, but I honor them because I am honor. It's who I am. You know, I love people not because they deserve it. I forgive people not because they deserve it. I do it because that's who I am in my original intent. And so what you will find is when someone engages an assignment, their real heart starts to show up, where they're really at, you know, where their soul is at, right? The way I define your soul is your mind, your will, your emotions. It's like the computer unit, your processing unit. You know, you have a spirit, you have a soul, you have a body, right? All of these make the being that you are. You can't ignore one of these. And I'm trying not to go too deep here. So, but that soul there is where a lot of your triggers come up. A lot of what's happened in your life, it shows up in that soul realm, mm-hmm. and you get a chance to choose and make decisions to rewire yourself
mm-hmm.
and either come into original intent or keep your whatever happened to you, you know, like keep your past and keep the pain and keep the wound. And keep
would these the be like trauma? We talk a lot of speakers talking about trauma, but that would be kind of like where traumas would come up on that.
Yeah. Soul. And so when your soul starts to dwell on this, like you start to really dwell on the trauma and starts to go deeper and deeper, it'll start affecting your body also. It starts mm-hmm. affecting your heart also. It affects every part of your being mm-hmm. because it's getting so saturated in what you were never supposed to be. Like, what is dis-ease? Dis-ease. It's when you come out of original intent, you come into dis-ease, right? And it can look like a physical thing, like a cancer, or it could look like a tumor or things like that. But there is a soul element. And the dis-ease usually is in that soul, in the spirit realm, more than the body. The body is just kind of where you see it above the surface.
Yeah.
But the real causes are in that place.
And we could probably, for other folks who might not understand the term, we could talk about it maybe energetic level, the energetic energy body. I'm glad people are talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, so the way I would see, this is my understanding of it, and obviously
everyone has
different understanding. So the energy that like we like to talk about, that's a great term. I love that term too. But that energy is made up of what's happening in my soul. It's what's happening in my soul, what's happening in my heart, you know, because what's happening in my soul is in my thought patterns. It's happening in my thoughts, my belief systems, the stories I've created, right? And quantum physics will talk about the electromagnetic field that's coming out of there. Mm-hmm. But then there's another field coming out of my heart. Mm-hmm. And that field is bigger than the field coming out of my head, coming out of my intellect, you know? So your energy is made up of this stuff. When you are outside of original intent, you start to bring all those kind of energies in there. So it doesn't matter how much you try and get the right principle, you know, and I meet a lot of people who look to things as a principle. They want to change their life with a principle. You can't change your life past, how do I explain this? So what is a principle? So people think like, you know, you want to act loving. And you want to do the right thing. And so they live by the principle. They turn love into a principle, not a positioning, not a purpose, not a person. When you do that, there's only so much you can get to because you're trying now to do on the outside to have on the inside.
It's still a doing. You're still
doing. It is a doing.
It's not
very
like
draining.
When you say that you're being honor, that sounds kind of, it's like our mind tries to kind of make sense of it, kind of says, what? You're being honor, but your heart understands it. I am honor. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to do that right now. I just thought of an actor. You just feel it. I am honor. Feel what that feels like in your body. Wow. Instead of I'm being honorable, it's like, okay, well, I don't really know what that means, you know, but it's a doing. So powerful. So powerful.
Yeah. And so even what you just said, someone might sit there and go, I am honor. And suddenly in their soul, something might show up like, but you're not. Remember what you did here. Or but you're not. And that there requires a rewiring. You can't ignore your way into really being honor. You have to process your way into it.
Okay.
So for example, like even this love thing that we're talking about, I can't do love. So for example, I love Nikki. I'll do anything for Nikki. So I'm really loving to Nikki. But my neighbor who snores so loud that I can hear him through my window, I can't. So when I'm doing love as a principle, I can love Nikki and I don't have to love my neighbor. But when I become love, there is no difference between how I view my neighbor and Nikki. Now
that
takes some work.
That's a bigger, it feels like that's a bigger responsibility.
It is.
I don't know if that's the word, but.
Well, so let me say it this way, because I am an Indian man who is 36, who is brown skin and has a beard. I didn't wake up today and be an Indian man who's brown skin with a beard to Nikki, but now I'm being a European man with no beard to my wife.
Right.
I am who I am.
You are who
but
you
that's,
are.
how ridiculous it is when we live by principle and not by position. Because we now will, that's why the church and the hypocrisy and the religion, like, oh, I love my congregation, but I treat my kids like rubbish and I abuse my wife. And that's what it is. Like, it's not I am, it's I do.
Yeah.
And when you live in the I do, it's only a matter of time before you end up in doo-doo. You know, you're going to end up in doo-doo at some point, because when you are doing, it's hard work.
It's hard work.
It's a portrayal of something that you wish you had.
Yeah.
You don't know how to walk in, you know?
Yeah.
So it takes a little bit more work. There's a little bit more pain. You know, Brené Brown talks about how the same gate that opens its door to love opens its door to pain. And if you shut your door to pain, you shut your door to love. If you shut your door to love, you shut your door to I am. If you shut your door to I am, you're stuck in I do. And you're just going to keep running down that hamster wheel, you know?
Stuck in that doo-doo.
In the doo-doo.
That's so good.
I saw a lot of this in Christianity. You know, except they have really nice looking doo-doo. But guess what?
Still smells the same.
It still smells. And no matter how much perfume you use, 2 days later, the real smell is going to come out. You know, and so then they have to create hierarchy and they have to create all these weird ways of relating to people to try and protect their doo-doo, you know. But when you are I am, you don't have to do that. And so when you see Jesus's life, Yeshua's life, the way I read it in the Bible, he never hid from anybody. He's hanging out with the drunkard. He's hanging out with the prostitute. He's hanging out with the religious elite. And he's the same. He takes the disciples and he doesn't say to them, I'll meet you 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. He's like, you're going to live with me. I'm going to eat with you. You're going to see everything about me. You're going to see that 24/7, I am who I say I am. There is no doo-doo here. And that's what I believe brings the ultimate freedom. You start to own who you are, the good, the bad, the ugly. You learn how to love people that have betrayed you. You learn how to love people that have hated you. You learn how to bless those who curse you. You learn how to be to others what they were never to you. They don't deserve it. But you are like that to them because that's how God is to all of us. Right now, God is supplying the same oxygen to the pedophile down the road, to the rapist around the corner, and to you. And, you know, if you and I were God, maybe we would shut some of the oxygen down to some of these guys. Yeah, because we are not love. We're still becoming.
Yeah.
We are still in that process. And so embracing that is the most freeing thing, you know?
Love it. Love it. Love it. We could talk for a long time, but we do have to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Joseph Wilson, can you tell us what you have going on right now? I know you're constantly having programs and challenges. You have a program for women. Just kind of let us know what's going on in the near future. And folks, I guess, can go to I Am Joseph Wilson to sign up for that stuff. But go ahead and give us a little rundown of what you're doing these days and what you got ahead. And especially in 2022, people want to get involved in stuff.
Yeah. So I am josephwilson.com, or you can connect with me on Facebook or Instagram. I'm there, Joseph Wilson. You'll see my face. But so my thing again, so I'm all about purpose, right? So my own purpose, I've watched the cycles evolve. You know, I was coaching people on a one-on-one basis. Then it became a 1 to 20. And then I saw my cycle expand, and it didn't expand because I was doing more. It didn't expand because I was marketing more and trying harder. It's just expanding because I'm expanding. And that's the thing I want you to remember is as you grow in you, you grow in purpose. As you grow in purpose, everything around you makes room for who you are becoming, right? And so for me in this phase now, I've done these purpose challenges. I do challenges on purpose because I'm called to be a mobilizer, right? I'm a coach. I'm not called to be a preacher. I'm not just talking about it. I'm going to make you walk in it. That is the whole point, you know? So even looking back at my life's training, which is a very big clue that you have towards your purpose is your life's training. I was a personal trainer. I was coaching people on how to do their next pull-up, how to do their next squat, their next push-up, how to take your next step, how to run your next kilometer, you know? That trained me to now be able to help people to take their next step. So I'm doing purpose challenges. They're a challenge on purpose because if it doesn't challenge you, it won't change you, right? There has to be a bit of a challenge element. And so now I'm building a purpose-built academy, a purpose-built university. And so we're doing it for purpose-built life. And I have a program called Catalyst that helps people from A to Z, how to figure out where you're at, how to move into your next step. I have a course for that. And now I'm starting to build out purpose-built marriage and then purpose-built wealth. Because everything has a purpose. When you don't understand the purpose, you're going to abuse it.
It's not fun.
And so I'm building this whole thing out. So yeah, I welcome you to join me on the journey. If anything I've said has resonated with you, Yeah. And this connection is also on purpose, for a purpose. And that would be my honor to serve you into your next step.
I love it. Thank you so much, Joseph Wilson. We will see you again soon. It's been an honor to chat with you. And I know that our viewers have gotten a lot out of that as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Nikki Lynn Pugh, AKA the Gentle House and Traveler, for the Victor to Victorious Summit. We will see you next time.
See you guys.